previously on Popping Collars.
Yeah, the movie is... I've never seen the movie, actually.
Oh, really?
Really?
I don't...
It's, yeah, nothing, it's not... nothing like the TV show.
Yeah, John Green got kicked off the project, apparently, partway through.
Of the movie? Went,
yeah.
He got taken out of his hands.
The movie's been kind
of fairly early on.
We have it because Thorman likes complete collections. So we have the movie, but it's still in its wrapper. So.
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection between religion and pop culture, the show where priests, pastors, ministers, and religious thinkers from around the country weigh in on what people are binge-watching, tweeting about, trolling on message boards, and celebrating on screens. My name is Greg Knight. I am currently residing in Palm Beach, Florida, and I'm your host as we delve into our latest roundtable conversation with our guests who this week include... Martin Elfert, my geographical opposite, coming to us from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Greg.
And back from somewhere in Middle America, a place that we like to call Omaha, Nebraska, it's Liz Easton. Hey, Liz.
Hey, Greg. Hey, Martin.
This is episode 11 of Popping Collars, and our topic today is a television show that often gets mentioned, actually, in the conversation of best TV shows of all time. It's sort of hovering in that stratosphere with The Wire and The Sopranos and The Shield. We're talking about Breaking Bad, the show whose elevator pitch must have been probably the worst thing in history. It's the story of Walter White, chemistry teacher who, after being diagnosed with a terminal form of cancer, becomes a crystal meth cook in order to support his family after he dies. It quickly becomes a character study, though, of one man's descent into the abyss of evil. The title of the show is pretty on the nose, as it turns out. So what the show does well, I think, though, is it challenges the audience to determine where they draw the line with Walt's actions. It's akin to Denzel Washington's performance in Training Day, where the black and white and the right and wrong are kind of blurred, and that line keeps getting moved by inches. And we, as the audience members, kind of bear witness to the temptations that befall Walter as the show progresses. So I guess what I'm wondering is, in looking back over the course of the show, how does evil kind of work in Walter's life? Is he ever a sympathetic character? And does it feel like he's seduced or tempted at all? Or is he kind of becoming his true nature? Do you have any thoughts along those lines?
Well, I don't know. Is it a total church nerd move to go to scripture immediately?
No, please do.
While I was thinking about what we'd talk about, I started wondering about the wilderness. And the wilderness is a theme which occurs throughout Scripture. And it's this kind of paradoxical place. It is a place of transformation, but also a place of danger. And I was thinking in particular about Jesus being tempted by the devil in the wilderness after his baptism. One of the themes, it seems to me, that shows up in that story is you can't make a little deal with the devil. You may think you're making a little deal, but you're either all the way in or not. And so Jesus says, you know, I'm not going to do even this little thing. I'm not going to do any of the things you ask, even if there's some big payoff for that. And I kind of wonder if that theme of wilderness, certainly a biblical archetype and maybe just a huge human archetype in general, if that's one of the reasons that we spend so much time in the desert in Breaking Bad, we find out in that show that the desert really is a dangerous place. I think of that episode where their RV breaks down and it's very clear that they're in huge, huge distress if they can't get a friend to drive out there or get it started again.
I think you're right. I mean, I think that really it's the opening shot of the show that kind of cements this, because you're dropped into the middle of Walter having to figure his way out of a scenario, and it is that wilderness experience, and he's totally exposed in the wilderness. That's what I love about that opening shot of Walter, is this kind of pathetic character in tidy whities, you know, with the cops running him down. And actually, the great thing about the opening to the show is that it could very well be the ending of the show. You have no idea at that point, like, if you're looking at like how Walter meets his demise, and the rest of the show is going to be kind of a flashback that got him there. And it turns out that it's actually the payoff to the very first episode. The theme of the desert is tied to this show, I think, and something about Walter going out into the desert, and where Jesus comes back one thing, Walter kind of comes back another thing from his wilderness experience, I guess.
Yeah, what I find so interesting and I guess spiritually challenging and nourishing for me about the story of Jesus's temptation in the desert is that the devil kind of speaks Jesus's own language with his temptations, and it's like they're tailor-made just for Jesus. Like, you know, turn these stones into bread, he says to this person who wants to feed the world, or, you know, this kingdom will be yours, he says to, you know, the king of creation. It's all, and I really do think that that's how sin and temptation and the devil and evil works, is by sort of seducing us with our own language and asking us to make choices that are very close to good choices, but can actually be quite destructive. And to me, that's kind of the story of Breaking Bad, is that Walter gives himself the excuse of doing something very bad for a good reason, but in the end, that sort of tears him apart. I am curious, and I kind of wonder if he really did want, if it really was a good reason at all, you know, at all. Yeah. You know, I wonder if he was always, if he always knew that this was just an excuse to do a very bad thing and be a very different kind of man.
You're making me think, Liz, I think it was the late Peter J. Gomes, the preacher at Harvard, who said that the devil doesn't attack us at our weakest point, because we've got the weakest point really carefully guarded. We realize it's a weak spot. The devil attacks us where we're strongest. And for Walter White, that's absolutely his skill as a chemist, as a scientist, and I think his sense of duty as a father and as a husband. And that becomes this, I don't know what, this point of entrance for what's really an exercise in his pride.
What always strikes me about Walter is he's a chemist. Like, he's a chemistry teacher, and that's the piece that I always kind of hung on to with the show, because he's very particular. Like, he's striving for perfection with his formulas. His blue meth is the perfect form of this drug, and he's striving for the purest possible thing. And yet he can never sort of attain perfection, because there's always something uncertain that exists on the periphery that he can't account for, that's ultimately going to lead to his downfall. So he adopts this name, Heisenberg, right? And anyone who's kind of done a cursory Google search pulls up the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. It's this idea that the more you know about the state of a particle, the less you know about the momentum of said particle, right? The less you know about where it's going to go. And that's kind of Walt. It's the more he knows about this world of cooking meth and this world of eventually dealing that he gets into with Gus, the less he knows where that road is going to take him. And it ultimately, it starts to fail him. It's funny, because this is, the more I think about the episodes of the show, it's more like a heist show. It's always Walter in some kind of in some kind of situation that he's got to figure his way out of. It's like Hank at the, you know, when they're trying to get rid of the RV and they're stuck in the RV and Hank's outside, or, you know, or a train robbery, for God's sake, if there's any more, if there's anything more of a heist scenario than that. It, you know, it's always Walt trying to manufacture his world, and then chaos comes in and he has to kind of figure it out.
It's almost kind of slapstick in that way. Yep. You know, I, those aren't the parts of the show that I enjoyed the most. Like, I sort of like the human drama, like I always do with the relationships and stuff like that. But I think that that's one of the reasons that people were drawn to the show, is that every episode there was this kind of slapstick comedy of errors type thing happening.
I hadn't really thought about Breaking Bad as heist before, or slapstick, but that's absolutely right. And I think it is one of the appeals of the show. I think I've told you guys that I had the experience a bunch of years ago of going to a screening of A Clockwork Orange. And so not seeing it on a videotape, but rather seeing it in a cinema full of people. And that's a film in which Kubrick films some of the most brutal violence that ever appears on screen, and films it as slapstick. And so here I was in this room with 200 or 400 people, who knows how many folks were there, and realizing I was surrounded by people who were roaring with laughter, that I was laughing. And I had this moment of horror when I said, what's going on that I'm capable of laughing at this, that my fellow citizens are capable of laughing at this kind of cruelty and this kind of suffering? I think Kubrick was really interested in challenging the audience to say, who are you watching this? And I wonder if that's not a theme that Gilligan was interested in as well. As he creates these heists and elaborate challenges that Walter reasons his way through, and sometimes Jesse reasons his way through, and we're rooting for this guy, like, you know, right, like, figure out how to erase the laptop in the police lockup. I wonder if Gilligan wasn't hoping that we would say, "What, gosh, what does it mean that I'm capable of? What does it mean that I'm cheering for this guy?"
Walter's just a guy. He's just a guy.
Yep.
You know, he's just a guy, and yet he's the face of evil.
Yep.
And I think that's what's fascinating about the show is in our last episode of Popping Collars, we talked about Buffy, and we talked about how Buffy being the Slayer was maybe the last person you would think would be chosen to have this task. Walter seems to be the last person that you would expect to be this great villain, to be Heisenberg. And yet that's who he is, ultimately, I would say, by the end of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or if we're going to look back in the Popping Collar archive, I remember 2 episodes ago, you guys were talking about running around with zombies. And maybe... maybe there is a similar thing at work there. I think one of the things that's appealing about the zombie genre is, could I figure out how to survive? Could I figure out, in this incredibly hostile world, could I figure out how to keep going and keep my family going? And maybe that is one of the Breaking Bad themes as well. Can I figure out, you know, if I were this guy faced with, like, how many cards are stacked against you when you've got terminal cancer, and now you're this sort of this newbie dealing with organized crime. Is there any way I could pull that off?
The show is it becomes a character study, like I said, of Walter White and his descent. And the idea is that we're supposed to kind of watch him. He's the one that we cue off of as the audience. And yet there's this whole cast of characters that's drawn into his world that are a part of this system. And I guess probably Jesse is the one that we're introduced to early on, and he's the one that we're supposed to make – he's the one that we're supposed to prejudge going into the show, I would say. He, you know, you talk about Walter having this wilderness experience of going out in the RV into the New Mexico desert. I think that Vince Gilligan is trying to present us a scenario where we assume that Jesse is the tempter. He's the devil. And Walter is the Jesus figure, and Jesse is tempting him into a life of sin, a life of evil. And the trick is that that's actually the reverse. It's Walter who's going to go well past where Jesse would have ever even thought to go down this path. And it's actually Jesse who's the redeemable character of these two. There's no real redemption for Walt in his narrative. And yet there is for Jesse. Jesse's able to repent. Their dynamic, I think, is something that the show is predicated on. One can't exist without the other. It has something to do with the power that Walt has with Jesse that he doesn't have with his family.
Yep.
Maybe he can be an authority figure that he can't be to Walt Jr. You know, that's something that's kind of reserved for Hank. It's really a complicated relationship that they have, but I think it's a really unique one too.
Yeah, you pointed out, Greg, when we were chatting before, that throughout the show, Walter is Mr. White to Jesse. He's always that teacher. There's always that teacher-student relationship. I wonder if there's not also a kind of father-son relationship. I don't know if you guys have had that experience of reading a synopsis on the internet that is supposed to be just an objective, here's what happened in the show. And without realizing it, the person writing that synopsis will sometimes sneak in information that the show is actually silent on, something that's actually a matter of interpretation for you as an audience member. And I remember reading a synopsis, is it in season two, where Jesse meets Jane and Jane subsequently dies? And I remember the synopsis said Walter doesn't intervene because he knows that Jane will take Jesse away from him and his power over Jesse is going to end. And I thought, well, that's a defensible interpretation, but it isn't an interpretation. An equally defensible interpretation is that Walter's come to understand Jesse as a son, and he thinks that if he keeps on hanging out with Jane, it's a matter of time before he overdoses himself. And in a way, he's making this decision in an attempt to save Jesse's life. That doesn't make it a morally defensible decision, but it does mean that there's a different rationale behind it than I just want to keep this guy under my thumb. We could argue that Breaking Bad is the story of Walter White struggling against Heisenberg and in spite of himself becoming Heisenberg. There's that amazing scene when is he both drunk and he's been beat up by Mike? I can't quite remember, but he has a conversation with Walter Jr. in which
he's
in tears, and the next morning he's incredibly embarrassed and apologetic, and his son says, no, that was the first time you've been real in months. We might say it's the first time you've been yourself in a long time. The Victorians wrote all these stories about sort of poisoned other identities. So you think of Oscar Wilde's Picture of Dorian Gray, and Robert Louis Stevenson writes Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I wonder if in some respects Breaking Bad is Dr. White and Mr. Heisenberg.
Great.
It's almost quaint, is it? When he's got the guy locked up in the basement in season one, and he's making that list, which includes the pros and cons of killing him, and one of the cons is it would go against Judeo-Christian values, a theme he never ever considers again.
Right. Once he rejects it, it's gone. Well, the whole show really is about choices and reactions to events. And like Walt as a chemist with his chemical reactions, the ones that make methamphetamine, the reactions of the cells in his body multiplying and becoming cancer, and the way that he reacts to the decisions that he makes, and also the things that happen all around him, are by degrees just worse and worse and worse. And that's, I think, when that suddenly what would have once been incomprehensible to him becomes an easier choice to make, you know? And I really think that that's how sin works. We do have to guard ourselves against the little degrees.
There's one episode that I always fall back on when I'm trying to describe what it is that I love about Breaking Bad, and that's the Fly episode.
Yes.
And the reason is because this is where we see Walter at his happiest, I would say. He's finally attained heaven. He has the perfect meth lab. He has the perfect setup. He has as much control as he will ever have at any point in the show. And during the course of this episode, in his, you know, sealed meth lab, a small fly inserts itself in, and he spends the entire episode trying to get rid of this fly. And actually, I guess the course of the episode takes place just in the meth lab. It doesn't go anywhere else. It's just Walter in there trying to eliminate the fly. And the reason that he tells Jesse that he's trying to do this is because the fly can contaminate. The fly represents contamination of his utopia that he's kind of created, of the meth. But the fly also represents that little thing, that little piece of chaos that's always going to exist in Walter's life that he's never going to be able to get rid of. And I feel like that's so often how I see sort of sin playing out in people's lives, is that it's that little fly that's kind of bugging people in their lives. And it seems like it's the thing that they focus on, and they either kind of give themselves over to, or they're trying desperately to get rid of it. And in turn, actually following down this path of like pursuing it and like picking at it, like, yeah, you know, like an imperfection on a sweater or something like that. And it just becomes this subversive thing that kind of takes over people's lives. But it's a little thing that becomes a huge thing, that becomes a, you know, this great downfall. I always look at that episode and I say, oh, that's it. That's the evil that exists on the show, and how great that, you know, evil is just a little fly. It's mm-hmm. just a little thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the whole show in one episode.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. If you're going to watch only one, the fly is the one to choose.
We were talking about this parable in, I think it's in Matthew 13. I haven't looked it up, where the devil comes in and sows weeds among the wheat. And then later on, the farmer is unable to tell the difference between the weeds and the wheat. And I think that that's really an interesting parable about sin, how the closer we are to it, the more indistinguishable it becomes from righteousness, and actually becomes like kind of tangled together at the roots. And for me, that's sort of the parable of Breaking Bad and other things like it, the warning that the more familiar we become with sin, whether we're just looking closely at it or kind of flirting with it a little bit, the closer we become, the more indistinguishable it can actually be from our righteousness. And I totally think that that's how the devil works. I absolutely think that the devil masquerades sin as righteousness. And I think that that's part of the story of the book of Revelation, ultimately, that the Antichrist is masquerading as the Christ. And I think our whole culture does that. I think that we lift up sin that masquerades as righteousness all the time.
I've made the case before that you could end the show at season four. Like, were you to want a happy ending to the show, then you stop at season four, because season five is ultimately, you know, where, like, even though you don't know exactly how the path is going to play out, you know exactly how the path is going to play out. And so, yeah, season five is for those who want to go all the way down, because I think that it's pretty obvious at the end of season four where it's going. But also in the last episode, we always say that the Popping Collars is a spoiler place. I would say that even in the last episode, there are two possible endings. There is an ending that can be interpreted before, you know, Vince Gilligan does this better than anybody else. The opening vignettes to the show,
yep.
Title screen vignettes. And you could argue that the vignette that appears before the very last episode is the end of the show. And then it gets to the title screen, and then you get what could very well be interpreted as a fantasy scenario moving forward. It could be fan appeasement moving forward, any of those things. But the great thing about that opening scene from the very last episode is that Walter White's end point is really a letdown. And it's basically him succumbing to his cancer in a car, and, you know, in the snow. And it's like, and that very well could have been how the show ended. And everyone would have been up in arms like, well, where was my big, you know, Jesse moment? And where was, you know, how, why didn't Walt get his comeuppance, you know, and stuff like that. But I think that was Vince Gilligan's way of saying, you know, things can end in, you know, in very anticlimactic ways. And I really appreciated that he gave us that scenario if we wanted it to be a pitiful end for Walter White. And really, that's kind of what Walter deserves, is a pitiful end, not kind of a blaze of glory.
Well, the whole show is really about death. You know, it's really a meditation on death and dying and what that leads us to do. And was it Heidegger who said that all life is being towards death? You know, at the end of the day, that's all we've got. We're born and we die. And it's, even if you're surrounded by people that you love, that's a lonely meditation when you think about dying. And Walter's experience with that leads him to do just insane things, crazy things, to try to control the one part of our lives that's absolutely uncontrollable and absolutely, uniform. You know, we all experience it. So I like that idea of him dying in a, you said pathetic way, but in a not Heisenberg way, you know, right, in that kind of fantasy, because it's more realistic, and it just goes to show that the thing that he was trying to outrun, no one ever will.
Yeah, I think you've hit on something huge, Liz. I don't know if this is true of other times and other cultures, but it's definitely true of Western culture. How much of our society is built around the notion, if I just make the right moves, I'm not going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I can stave it off indefinitely. You know, that's a seductive narrative and one we're very reluctant to critique.
Right. And I'm, you know, it's interesting to me in the circles that I run in and that you guys kind of do too, which is oftentimes with professional religious people, many of whom have been trained to be pastors. I hear people say stuff like, you know, I'm not afraid of death. Like, I've seen it happen so beautifully. I've witnessed it in such a lovely way. And I have too. But I think if you, I think that we're all afraid of death. And I think that we will do everything that we can to not confront that fear in a real way, beyond just considering it and meditating on it. I think it drives a lot of our ego. Yeah, I don't think anyone escapes that.
It's Hank who ultimately has the sort of noble end at the end of the day, rather than Walt.
Their characters just flip in the middle, at least in terms of my sympathies. And maybe not everyone is like this, but in the beginning, you're kind of like, God, Hank is such a dummy. Like, why? He's so stupid. Why can't he figure this out? And as soon as he does figure it out, it is, for me, it was all Hank. Like, he had my sympathy 100%. Anne Marie. That was really interesting for me, how Gilligan set that up. That Hank went from being just like this complete dummy in my mind to the ultimate hero and a pretty sharp guy. Like, he figured it out.
Yeah, there's early parties where Hank kind of sets himself up as the action hero, and Walter is kind of this, you know, pathetic little sidekick kind of, you know, who can't even inspire his own son. Like, Hank has to do that.
There's got to be something in this just about masculinity in general, and maleness and what it means to be a man and a dad and all that stuff that is really rich here. And for me, and I mean, probably for everyone, that whole level of this show, I interpreted as like deeply unsettling. That was the part of the show that made me the most really like viscerally uncomfortable, was these guys kind of exploring what it means to be men in kind of a dark way.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. You know, we talked about the wilderness aspect before and how that, you know, has the, you know, it brings back the Jesus image of the temptation. In the West and the desert and the wilderness of the West also for Americans holds the idea of cowboys and, you know, the frontier and manliness. I mean, that's where Westerns were set, because that's where men were men and, you know, and embraced a very particular form of masculinity that involved, staking your claims and, you know, fighting for your territory and your possessions and stuff. And I think that there's an element of that here, an element of Western to the setting. And so, again, it makes the choice of New Mexico probably a very it gives it another layer as far as where it's set, because now it's sort of set in the Old West, a tamed Old West, but the West nonetheless.
Yeah. Right. Well, one wilder than we think.
Our Go In Pieces segment, where we plug our ministries, our Twitter feeds, our websites, our Facebook pages, whatever it is that you have, and however people can get in touch with you. So, Martin, since you're new to the mix, how can people find you? Where are you? What are you doing? And how can people get in touch with you?
Well, I'm a priest in Spokane, Washington, at the Cathedral of St. John the Evangelist. I write an advice column here, the tongue-in-cheekishly named Father Knows Best, and you can find that on a fabulous website called SpokaneFaithAndValues.com. And if you want, you can find what amounts to a filing cabinet full of my sermons. That's on Tumblr at Martin Elfert. Elfert being spelled E-L-F-E-R-T, martinelfert.tumblr.com. And I don't tweet a whole lot, but every now and again at Martin Elfert.
Great. Liz, where are you? How can we find you?
I am the canon to the ordinary for the Diocese of Nebraska. And my home is in Omaha, but you can find me on the highways and byways of the great state of Nebraska a lot. And you can follow me on Twitter at Liz East. And recently, you can learn a little bit more about our Diocese of Nebraska by going to wanderingclarkson.com, where you can read the reflections, not of me, but of a tiny wooden bishop who also travels the diocese, and his name is Wandering Clarkson. And he loves to photograph the great state and to write little blog posts about it.
My name is Greg Knight. I am the director of Children and Youth Ministries at Bethesda by the Sea Episcopal Church in Palm Beach, Florida. You can find us at bbts.org. You can also find me at That Greg Knight on Twitter. Popping Collars is all over the place. We are on Twitter at Popping Collars. We are on Facebook. You can also find us, you can email us, poppingcollarspodcast@gmail.com. You can find our show on TuneIn Radio, on SoundCloud, on Stitcher, and you can absolutely find us on Episcopal Cafe. We love their site. We love the opportunity that they've given us to feature our podcast. And so a big thank you to them. This has been another episode of Popping Collars. Thank you very much, Martin and Liz, for being with us. And we'll see you next time. Keep those collars popped.